podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The Celtic Exchange, a fresh insight on Celtic Football Club.
We're now in the midst of what's set to be a huge week in the context of the season as Celtic head to Ibrox on Sunday, top of the table and looking to maintain our 100% record against Scotland's second best team this season. We'll discuss all of that and much more in this latest episode of the Celtic Exchange Weekly. This is Tino. Tonight I'm joined by a full house of Asim, James and Paddy as we once again cover all things Celtic. Asim, nice to have you back on the show. Nice to have Celtic top of the table. What are you saying at the moment?
Yeah, it's definitely a very positive weekend. I think just in terms of players coming back, Rio Tati, I think, was a real bright spot. Just to see him back to kind of where he left off. Because I know there's been a concern sometimes with Rio that he might take a few games to get up to speed. But I think right from the off, you could see how much value he brings to the team. And all in all, I was quite encouraged. I know at 0-0 at half-time, some people might have been a wee bit concerned. But I thought we were still looking pretty dangerous without actually the end product. But second half was solid from back to front. So I think we're going into next week in pretty much as good a position as we could hope for in terms of players coming back and just a bit of form as well. So yeah, all to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. Paddy, just in terms of some of the stuff Asim said there about how it played out, it'll be nothing each at half time. Question for you in a second. Were you concerned? Was the result ever in doubt? But in terms of some of the stats, first half, 77% possession, but only one shot on goal. Second half, similar possession, 75%, but nine shots on goal. It's clear we ramped up half-time wise and beyond, and from that point on, there was only one winner.
Yeah, I think we're always in control of the game, absolutely. It's very difficult sometimes, and as we touched on Friday, a slow park can really upset our play. Could we look at the full 90 minutes and say that we could go up a couple of gears? I think so. I still think that there is that in us, and that's with a team that's coming back and getting a bit stronger, and the likes of CCV playing, Hatate coming back and getting an hour as well, absolutely crucial. And then you're hoping for next week, if it's looking likely, that you see McGregor coming back and slotting right back in there. I think they level up again. I really do.
Yeah, I think there's clearly levels to go, and hopefully Sunday comes when we bring them at the party. James, we were chatting just a wee bit before coming on there about Livingston as a club, as an entity. They're gone, more or less. They're pretty much down already. But what you do have to credit them for is seeing the value in selling out their stadium. Celtic, as we've seen to great effect yesterday, had three sides of the ground. Brilliant banners, brilliant display. What's the message I've got to hear? Hold on to our title, boys. Don't give up the dream. And it was spectacular. Green, white and gold, tricolour across the stadium. Really good to see. But the moment you turn on your telly, and I made that point there, the atmosphere's just booming out at you. And that's on Sky Sports. That's going around the UK, if anyone wants to tune in. And you'd far rather see and hear something like that than some of the nonsense we've been served across the season so far.
Yeah, I mean, let's not be confused. It's not a benevolent gesture. You know, it's because it puts money in the till, and that's what a small provincial club needs. And it's good that they're not so bloody minded to say, well, we'll try and have the majority fans and, Hibs, Hearts and Kilmarnock and all that kind of stuff. I mean, talk about shooting yourself in the foot, but when they do that, those clubs, they just kill the atmosphere in terms of selling this game to others and bigging up. We're talking about generally, bigging up the game and how poor the media coverage is and everything like that. And Livy don't fall for that. They do, create the atmosphere. The football is poor, has been, since they've came into the Premiership, and the pitch is a disgrace. So for those reasons, I'm happy to see them go. But yeah, for the atmosphere, yeah, fair play to them.
Yeah, I'll stay with you for now, James. I was accusing you last week of throwing on the tinfoil hat.
Well.
I can't remember what madness you came out with last week, but I'm going to come back to you this week for your learned opinion on the penalty that wasn't. Kyogo Furuhashi, just before half-time, is it Devlin, the defender?
Yeah.
Kicks through the back of Kyogo. In football, in days past, that's not a penalty. In the modern day, when the threshold is so low to get a penalty, ergo Rangers penalty on Saturday at Ibrox, it's a penalty all day long, and you're just waiting for the ball to go out so they can do the VAR check, we can get through the formalities and watch Don Robertson do that, and he didn't do that.
I don't think that's a modern development as a penalty, other than it gets a second look by VAR. I mean, need to look at it in the round. There was a penalty that wasn't a penalty at Ibrox that they got on Saturday, and apparently there was a penalty that we didn't get at Livy. So what I said last week was the referees would up their game, and there you go. That's one fixture calendar they've run through. So I'm going to stick to my guns on that one. And you've seen nothing yet. Wait to see what happens on Sunday. But in terms of that penalty, Whereas it's two guys going for the ball, and it's, as I was saying to ask him there before, it's about 45 in Devon's favour and 55 Kyogo in terms of where the ball's coming towards. Kyogo's fast and he gets in front and he makes it, you know, 90-10. But Devon doesn't stop, is his problem, and he kicks right through the back of Kyogo, and it's a penalty. Before VAR, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, kick a guy in the box, you don't get the ball, it's a penalty. Why that then went to VAR, Alan Muir, you'll remember him.
Yep.
And he does the quickest VAR check, aye, doesn't send Robertson to the monitor. I think if Robertson goes to the monitor and sees all angles, he's given that all day. He's not going to the monitor. And bear in mind, that was the same area where McCausland got that ridiculous penalty earlier in the season, where he got zero contact and he just folded his legs and got a penalty. So, you know, I mean, I watched Alan Morrison's interview with Paul John on Axum earlier on, so I'm fired up for it all. They've got me full of stats.
It's on my to-do list. Is it worth a watch?
Very much so.
Yeah. So I'm going to check that out. It's doing the rounds just now, and Alan's excellent, but he's not like James. He's not a moon howler. He's not.
I don't know.
A jest, of course.
I think we've gone quite well.
But Alan presents with info and stats. He just backs it. He's not here saying there's a democracy. That's the wrong word. There's a
conspiracy.
The almost the opposite. But he's just backing up with examples and facts and stats from what I'm led to believe. So I look forward to watching that, Paddy. But what's your take on it? Do you know, just one thing before I do get your reply. Mm-hmm. I think Alan Muir is making a mockery of the on-pitch referee. He's making Don Robertson look stupid because he's the one how did Robertson not give that? Robertson may well have given that had he been allowed to go to the screen.
Sorry, Paddy, I didn't think it was a penalty in real time. It was only when I saw the replays, I went, oh, it's clearly a penalty.
So they're not working well together.
The only thing that I keep kind of like looking at it in terms of like where, if anywhere, have they seen that, like, they don't think that's a penalty? And the only thing I keep thinking back to is Kumar Roof and Lagerbielke at the beginning, at the game at Ibrox.
Lagerbielke's in possession.
Exactly. And that's where my thinking is that they're looking at the stills, they're looking at the movement, and they're thinking that Mikey Devlin's in possession of that ball.
He's nowhere near it.
He's nowhere near it, but they need to come out and clear up why that is not a penalty.
Well, they won't.
Because if you look at it in a still, you could kind of make the argument that it does look like it's Devlin's ball, but Kyogo's nipped in front, and then the contacts came in. But the ball's played across the box. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense at all. I'm baffled by it. And then I'm sure we'll touch on it, but you're getting people coming up with stuff that's not even happening on the TV about Kyogo already being down before contact being made. Is an absolute joke. Just crazy what we're up against.
I think, and you know, they've been quite good over the years, but behind the whistle of made an arse themselves on this one. They've got it totally wrong. They've made a ridiculous call.
Do you want to explain that? So Behind the Whistle is the referees podcast. Yeah. Used to be Get Involved Referee, and there's been a kind of change behind the scenes there. I know Des relatively well. Des Roach, former Grade 1 official, and it's him and Stephen Conroy. I've just glanced at a tweet today, so I don't know the full context of it, but I think they've come down completely wrongly from what I can see. But could you explain to anyone that's not seen it so far?
Much similar to what Paddy's saying, they've gone with stills rather than footage. And you know, if you show this still and that angle and this, and one of them actually looks photoshopped, it's that bad. you might come to conclusions, but just like, you can use the stills to inform you towards the footage and then watch the footage, but it's the footage that will tell you. And the two angles, one behind Kyogo and one facing Kyogo, and it's just Stonewaller stuff. But they've stuck to their guns and like, see if you've got new evidence, it's okay to change your mind, you know.
But what are they saying? Something like Kyogo actually stands on Devlin? Is that not what
he stands on his toe and stuff like this? And he's jumped in front of Devlin's. They're making out Devlin's about to receive the ball, which he's not. And Kyogo's jumped in front of him and taken the kick as if Roof jumping in front of Lagerbielke when he's in possession of the ball. Two completely different things.
I'll give Des a shout after.
I'd love Des's right reply, and we genuinely want to see that, particularly from someone who's informed and has been in the game in that regard.
Yeah. Let's move on from it for now before we end up down a real wormhole with all of that. Asma, I want to touch on a fella you mentioned, and rightfully so, Rael Hatate. First appearance for Celtic since he had 20 minutes off the bench against St Mirren on the 2nd of January. Before that, he only had 7 minutes against Atletico on 25th of October before he broke down that night. He's played very little football this season. That was his 12th appearance of the season, and he's only played 591 minutes. But it was great to see him back. What a boost for Celtic.
Yeah, he's one of the only ones in our midfield, I think, that has the ability to really speed up the play of our game. He gets the ball in the half turn, and he automatically moves it forward at speed. And I just think that's something that was so noticeable very early on in comparison to some of our other midfielders. Who all I thought played pretty well, but I just think he offers that something different. And I was a bit worried about him coming into the plastic pitch, you know, after that long out, and he's not had a lot of minutes. And I've said before that he does sometimes take a bit longer to get up to speed, but I thought he took the game by the scruff of it very early on. And it just adds a bit of fluidity to our team. So him getting those 60 minutes playing as well as he did, and then you've got the possibility of Callum McGregor coming back in next week. You've suddenly got good options in there. And the trio that I would go with would be like Hatate, McGregor and O'Reilly, and I think the three of them work really well. So let's hope McGregor is fit. But I just think having Rio gives the fans a boost. And I think the teammates as well. You see that, the players around them, they must like you must enjoy playing with a player like that. You know, he's just so dynamic. Had a good couple of shots on goal as well, so he can chip in with goals. And I think it really highlights how much we have missed him at times. You know, when we've missed likes of Carter Vickers and Hatate, you can see why it's had such an impact on our team. When you see yesterday, even just Carter Vickers, how good he is at the back and how assured we look. So I think having these guys back for the running could really be crucial.
100%. Paddy, I think Paulo Bernardo's a good footballer. I think Tomoki Awata's a good footballer. But none of the two of them are Rio Hatate. He's a different level of footballer altogether.
He is. I think I'd said this on Friday as well. I think he's better than Matt O'Reilly and what he offers up. It's just it's everything that he sees. His vision is entirely different from what we get from any of our other attacking midfielders. He could be better than Callum McGregor. I do think that if he stays fit. I just think he's such an intelligent footballer, reads the game so well, and has just his vision, his short passing, long passing is just he's got everything, but it's just that staying fit. Yeah. That seems to be the big issue, and maybe a reason why he's not done much in his career, albeit I know his journey via university and the likes, but I still think that he's got levels to go. And 60 minutes yesterday, and you know, looked as if he was fairly comfortable with it as well. So they've not rushed him back for a reason. I think they've got him up to a really good level of fitness, and it's now just match practice. But confident for him.
Yeah, you and I done the pre-match on Friday, Paddy, and I said at the time, and I reiterated it here, James, I think Rio Hatate, he's certainly Celtic's most creative outlet, and I think he's potentially the best player at the club. I think he's such a talent, and it's easy when you're having an up and down season like Celtic are having. You know, it's been a roller coaster at different times, and it's sometimes easy and lazy to say, but Hatate's missing, what a difference he could make. But you can see that with a lot of players. I think it's a real genuine point. We really miss him. We really miss what he brings to the table in terms of goals and assists. Don't know if you've seen his post-match interview. His English is getting there. He's kind of still doing it through an interpreter. He's claiming the goal. And I'm giving him it, Paddy.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
What do you think, James?
What was the question?
About him claiming
the giving him the goal?
No, I'm not giving him the goal. I'm giving him an outstanding performance. I didn't expect to see him. Just because of the pitch. It's totally changed the way that you approach the game on Sunday, build up to the game, because I thought he'd maybe get not even half an hour, you know, 10, 20 minutes just to be extra cautious. But Rodgers is taking your view that he's my best player and I want to see if he's ready. So he's played that 60 minutes and he's more than in contention. I think he starts. I think that's a given now, right?
Yeah.
So you're starting to look at your midfield now, and I know we'll come on in more detail, and you start looking at the midfield and going, well, right, there's one of the three gone. McGregor, if he's available, he's in.
Is he?
100%. If he's available, if he's fit, yeah, because he's got the experience of that tight. He doesn't need time to get up to speed.
February 22, that's all I think about.
Banging right back in, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So he's in. So you're really looking at, is McGregor going to be in the six with O'Reilly in front of him and Hatate? Or is Awata going to keep his place with McGregor and Hatate in front of him? And for me, I thought Awata was outstanding on Sunday. Now you can argue the quality of opposition, all that kind of stuff, but I just think he settled into that six role really well, and it's natural for him. It's a real debate over what you get and what you lose by bringing McGregor back or having him forward, and what you get and what you lose by leaving O'Reilly out altogether, who's off form, to be fair. But the form for me would be Awata, McGregor and Hatate. That's not necessarily how it's going to go.
Before Callum McGregor got injured, they were doing the whole Awata sitting deep and push McGregor further up. We only got to do it for a couple of games before the injury. I tell you what we'll do. I do have some questions regarding Sunday's midfield lineup later in the piece, so we'll put a bit of focus on that then. Paddy, last question, just as we're covering a wee bit on Rio Hatate. What a plus certainly to see him get. I think it was actually 65 minutes, so huge bonus for that. But also out with a 3-0 win, back to the top of the table, clean sheet and all that stuff. It's Cameron Carter-Vickers coming through the 90 minutes. It's brilliant to see that, and it's so important to Celtic.
It's massive. I think we're very quick to kind of look at how up and down our season has been in terms of points dropped over the course, and definite questions about some of the performances. Without a doubt, we've had some poor performances this season. But what we've not had is a fully fit squad, and we've spoke about this quite a lot lately. Perfect time for it to come back together. I'm excited for the run in. These guys have been massive for us for the last two seasons. Carter Vickers, Hatate, and obviously Callum McGregor. I just think that they know what it takes. Real confidence for the rest of the team as well, like you had mentioned. I just think it's going to be an exciting run in for us. But I tell you what, a good kind of kick off to the run in yesterday for us, and just continuing a bit of good form just now. But as I say, the more these guys play together, I just think that they'll kick into another level. I really do.
Yeah, and I think there's no better time than to get your squad together after some really challenging injuries to various key players. I think at the moment, Louis Palma's the only injury concern, which is, and the suggestion is he'll be back for the weekend, which is a great position to be in, and you've got all your big hitters. Hatate, Callum McGregor and Carter Vickers, potentially three of Celtic's, you know, top players, most important players, have all missed crucial parts at different times. Asim, I want to look at the moment on another guy who had a key role to play yesterday, but it was off the park. It was John Kennedy. Obviously, he steps in. Paddy and I covered the ban, so Brendan Rodgers missed the game against Livy, back for Ibrox, and that's a huge boost. John Kennedy, the kind of long-standing number two at Celtic, he steps in his absence. And I'm going to read a quote out first of all. So he was asked a question by Luke Shanley on Sky Sports, quite a negative question, I think, regarding Celtic's recent clean sheet record. John Kennedy replies, "It's always nice when you focus on the negatives. We've scored 17 goals outside of the Hearts game, and we've scored another three today. Our defensive game is always important. We know that always gives us momentum as well. Today we were strong. We were really strong at the back. I don't even know if Livy got a corner." They didn't. "All round, it was very pleasing." What do you think about John Kennedy and how important he is to Brendan Rodgers' setup?
Yeah, he's been there so long now, isn't he? He's obviously offering something that so many different managers have trusted him and have kept him and wanted him to stay as part of the picture. And, you know, I know a few boys, like one of my friends who kind of works at Celtic as well, and he says behind the scenes he's brilliant with the players. The players trust him, they get on with him. So by all accounts, he's a steady kind of guy to have around. And anytime I've heard him in interviews in the manager's absence, I think he comes across really well. And I think, as you say, he dealt with that really well, because it was after a very good performance and result, a quite loaded negative question. And he's dealt with it brilliantly, because I did think yesterday it was one of those games where I didn't ever feel like Livy were going to score. And we just looked so assured. So, yep, Kennedy, as expected. I think we, you know, fans of maybe on the back of the COVID season, were kind of wanting him out and just wanted everyone out from whoever was related to that season. But I think you've seen under Ange and now again under Rodgers, these managers trust him for a reason. They want him around for a reason. And I think that shows through more and more every time you hear him. So, yeah, I think he's doing well. And, you know, he's obviously one that the manager's happy to kind of take on the ownership when he's not there.
Someone messaged us recently saying that Kennedy and anyone else involved during that failed 10 season should have been out. And I says, well, what about all the other seasons where we've won the league with John Kennedy? I think John Kennedy must have something like 9 or 10 of the last 11 titles, something like that. So, listen, glass half full, glass half empty, depends how you want to look at it. You could certainly just say, one bad season, he's out. Aye. What about 9 good seasons? I think he's played a huge part. James, just in terms of the bigger picture, not specifically about John Kennedy, but how important do you feel it is that a manager in general is able to be on the sidelines? There was a debate whether it really mattered if Rodgers missed or not, and whether he was going to miss Ibrox or not. But how important do you feel that the manager, you know, can be there and really kind of feeling the pulse of the game, you know, picking up on things that you just won't pick up in the stands, and guiding his players through it? Do you think it's vital, or is it not so much a big thing in this modern game?
I think it's less important. It's still important, but it's less important when you've got a guy sitting next to you who's calmed up to Kennedy and can really message you. So it's almost like he's talking to Kennedy directly. But I think one of the big things is how tight your team is. So Rodgers and Kennedy know each other very, very well, go back many, many years. So he knows exactly what he wants Kennedy to do, and Kennedy knows how to do it. So there's less issue there. If it's a start of the season, if it's a new combination of manager, assistant manager, that kind of thing, maybe it's more acute. But it certainly didn't impact us yesterday. Would you want it for Sunday? No. So, you know, it's maybe just depends on the game.
Paddy, do you think it's a huge and welcome boost that Rodgers will be back on the track for Sunday?
You want your manager there every week, do you know? It's a psychological boost, absolutely. I think there's been people kicking and screaming about it, so that's a start straight away. That's a small win for Celtic. He's massive in these fixtures. Incredible record. He's got one defeat in them, and I always just think back to that 3-2 game. To hit the goal to go and say, do you know what, we're down to 10 men, I'm putting a striker on. That's what this manager's all about. We some of our fans, I think, can be quick to forget that. I think he knows the magnitude of the fixture, and I think he reads the games very well. And we've seen that with a victory at Ibrox at the beginning of this season, and then a comfortable victory in December as well. So yeah, he should be there, and it's great to have him there.
I think particularly for this fixture, though, it's a fixture he really, really shines in. Mm-hmm. And especially with us having no fans there, I just think having his presence there will make such a difference.
Yeah, I think it's huge. There's a stat doing the rounds today. I think it was in our group chat, James. Don't know if it's true or not. I need to check it. But Brendan Rodgers' record at Ibrox, 83% win rate. Philip Lamont's 81%. So the stats are there if you want to check them out. Listen, it's a huge weekend ahead for Celtic. And remember, we'll be back on Friday with an extended pre-match special. Myself, James and Paddy are doing that at 12 noon on Friday. And we'll be back on Sunday shortly after the game with the Final Whistle Show. If you aren't already following or subscribing to the Celtic Exchange on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast, then do so now to ensure you don't miss a single thing this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take a look at one player in particular who stood up to be counted on a number of occasions this season. Welcome back, folks. Celtic's Player of the Year event is taking place at the Hydro this year on Sunday, 12th of May, and as part of that, voting is now open for the fans' Player of the Year. The shortlist includes Kyogo, Matt O'Reilly, Liam Scales, Callum McGregor, Dyson Maeda, Alistair Johnson, that's a long shortlist, isn't it? Greg Taylor. And there's one remaining name which I've not yet read out, but one who has really stepped up for me, and he'll definitely be getting my vote, James, and it's Joe Hart. I think it's unusual in a season where, touch wood and all that stuff, hopefully you're going to claim the title, potentially the Scottish Cup as well, and it's not one of your creatives, one of your forward-type players. But I think Joe Hart has really, really stepped up, particularly performance-wise, yes, you know, in the last few weeks and months, but just as a leader. We've missed Callum McGregor, we've missed Cameron Carter-Vickers, and you need the presence of someone who's been there and done that, and I think Joe Hart's ticking a lot of boxes for Celtic right now.
Yeah, and he has done since he came in the door. You know, he's been such a massive signing for us, and you know, a lot of folk didn't expect him to be the massive character and contributor that he has been in these last, you know, nearly three seasons. You see the way he conducts himself with interviews, pre, post-match, whatever, whether he's a captain or not. He's just so assured, so calm, so positive and resolute. And you know he's carrying that message everywhere he goes, in the dressing room, at training, on the pitch. And the players feed off that, particularly, as you say, times when we've been not just missing captains, but, you know, not just missing important players, but missing your captain as well, he said to fill in there. So would he be getting my vote? So as a friend of ours at the Follow Show, Brian, and he's went to give, he has given Hart man of the match on a few occasions this season. I tend to not do that because it sends out the wrong message, which is wrong, right? I understand that.
The message is what the message is.
Is he the best player on the day? So I don't tend to do, because like you say, it says that you've been under the caution stuff, but he has. And particularly this season, because I think towards the start of the season, he was coming under a bit of pressure. And, you know, maybe the odd, you know, say that hadn't, you know, you hadn't quite got to or something like that. And it was like, oh, see, I told you. And there's just too much of that told you so stuff in football in general, I think, or maybe society in general. But they were just on him, saying, you know, we should replace him. And don't get me wrong, we should have replaced him. We tried to with Seagrass, we got that wrong, and we should have fixed that in the summer, and we didn't. Now we absolutely need to, because Joe's going to retire. But he then picked up his form about, you know, October, November, whatever it was, and he's been key for us ever since then. Big, big saves and big, big games getting us over the line. And he deserves all the plaudits that's coming to him.
Paddy, you've got that situation at Celtic, fairly unique, that as a goalkeeper, you can do nothing for 85 minutes and then have to spring into life. I should have had the exact examples for this section, but was it St Johnson? Goal up or two up, and he's... I think we're 2-1 up.
2-1, we scored.
And he saved one, a real great save at Celtic Park and at the Rangers end, if you want to call it that. And we break up the park and it's 3-1 and it's job's done. But that's just one example. I think he stepped up time after time, and he was under huge pressure. He is not the best. I don't think he ever has been the best at coming out and claiming crosses. It's not been his thing. What he is doing now, actually, he's coming out and punching and getting distance on it. He seems to have changed his game. and at 37-ish, about to retire, hats off to a guy who's willing to change his game at this late stage. But I think he's been really, really impressive, Paddy. You seen him post-match yesterday with the celebrations, just soaking it all up. This is a guy who now has a max of 9 games left in his career. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been one of those people that said he should have been replaced. And I still think that he should have. For me, he has cost us some savable goals this year.
That is not on the agenda.
Listen, I'm coming round. Don't worry, I'll get there. I'll bring it back.
Hold on, Joe.
Keep listening. I've got you, mate. But I think what you've kind of got to see is that he has also had such an unsettled backline all season, and I think he's a confidence player, Joe Hart. He does come across very well. I think he talks a good game. I think he does have leadership qualities, 100%. But ultimately, there needs to be trust between him and his backline, and I don't think he had that for the first 6 months of the season, to be honest. 5 months of the season. You then kind of come into January, and I actually think back to probably the game before the winter break against Rangers, but before the St Mirren one. He pulls off 2 or 3 incredible saves in that game, but then goes and lets in the free kick from Tavernier. Now, take nothing away, it's a good free kick, but I still think a goalkeeper gets across to it, personally. What I've seen from this point on and from the break and from a bit of disillusion for Celtic fans in terms of our transfer window and in terms of how things are going, is that the spirit between the players all seems to have got a bit stronger. Well, yeah, we had a couple of ropey performances, but it seems to be that he has focused on each and every single game, knowing that he has come to this end. He's announced his retirement, for me, at the right time, going into a run-in, and his performances have been absolutely brilliant. Some crucial saves from him. He's a very, very good goalkeeper. I think he's had an incredible career, and I think he'll want to go out with 2 trophies. I really do. And it's 100% commitment, 100% concentration from, at one point, a world-class goalkeeper, in my opinion.
I think the timing of his announcement, Assam, was really pivotal. It's an important message to send out, and you need to be careful with it. And the story is that he contacted the club and kind of coordinated it with them. I think he sat down with his own guy to do the interview, all that kind of stuff. It was, you know, carefully staged, because that's the modern game. You've got to be careful with how you put these things out, and in terms of how they might be received mid-season. Is he down in tools? What's the approach? And actually, if anything, he's stepped up since then. I think it's obviously been on his mind. He could have gone and got another club. Somebody would give him a 2-year deal if he wants it. Go to the MLS, which was the chat. But he's decided, I want to go out here and I want to go out on a high, and I want to get all the speculation out on the table and say, this is what I'm doing. And I think it's certainly galvanised him as an individual, but I also think it's galvanised his teammates. You've heard various guys now come out and say, words to the effect of, we want to do this for Joe Hart. He's our guy, and we want to make sure, yes, that we go out as winners, but he is one of our main characters in the dressing room, also finishes on a high.
You stopped short. You didn't say, is he getting your vote?
No. To be honest, no one said a consistent season.
That's the thing I was going to say.
I know. No one. It wasn't much at last.
If in doubt, just vote Joe.
Okay, no bother.
We've got 2 here anyway. Maybe 3.
I was asked this question earlier, and I was reluctant to give it as well for many of the reasons you said. But if you do look at it, I think he's one of the few players this season who you can say is consistent. He's not really had a bad spell. I think obviously there was the Feyenoord free kick off the top of my head, maybe the Rangers free kick, and maybe a couple of other wee instances. But by and large, he's not had a poor spell. And I would say since the return of the break, Bucky Thistle game included, if you remember, he made a 1-on-1 save there.
Yeah.
In pretty much every game since, he's made saves at crucial points. I think at Pittodrie, especially Easter Road, if you remember. So he really has kind of shown his worth in the last few months in terms of on the pitch. But I think the bigger thing with him is, like you say, his leadership skills, having that experience, having that guy that you feel galvanises the rest of the squad. As you mentioned, I think it was Greg Taylor maybe on Instagram or something said, right, let's finish this well, or something along those lines on his retirement post. He seems a very popular figure. On the park as well, he's making big saves now. So I definitely think, you know, if he carries this form on, and we've got two derby games left, if he makes big saves in those, you could argue that he has been the most consistent and most valuable player this season. Obviously, we've just had a bit of inconsistency with the rest of the players as well, so he's not a standout candidate. But his worth has been brilliant. You know, he's one of those, every time he speaks, he comes across really well. I think his personality, just from the day one when he signed, there was maybe a lot of fans who weren't on board with the signing, but he's just won them all around with how he's came across. And yeah, I think he could be a crucial part in the remainder of the season, just if he can keep up his form, and just like you say, that leadership, that know-how of winning titles, he's done that. He's one of the few in that squad to have. So it could be a perfect send-off, a couple of titles and a player of the season vote from the fans would be lovely.
Yeah, I think title-wise, Paddy, you can confirm this. Is he get two of them in City?
Aye.
And two here. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to add a further title, absolutely. And I think what you are seeing, as I say, each and every time he now pulls on the gloves, as I say, there's maybe nine games to go. There's a real laser focus. I think he's going out in every single game saying, I'm not going to do this many more times. I'm going to make it the absolute best it can be each and every time between now and the end of the season. And it is unique, isn't it? This is the 1st of April we're recording, and you've got, well, you don't have to make these votes. Nobody's got a gun to your head, but you're asked to make these votes when there's still potentially nine games of the season to go, and there's a lot can happen in those final games. But the question's been asked of Celtic, that's why we've asked it here. Paddy, I'll come to you first on my next question. If it is not Joe Hart, and I've given you the short/long list, who is it?
Tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one. I think he's been a bit off the boil lately, but I do think like Matt O'Reilly has been so important for us this season. Not playing with the guys he usually plays alongside, a lot of change in the midfield as well. You look, every position, there's been so much change this year. So the consistency has been totally out the window for the full team.
See, just on that part, actually, I'd scribbled down while you were chatting. I was fully listening to you. I was very
right,
focused.
Myth.
But Joe Hart, at different times, he's had that inconsistency. And the reason you reminded me is because you talk about it a lot. As a goalkeeper, having a steady and reliable back four is so important. But at different times, he's had Tony Ralston at right back. Bernabe at left back. Mm-hmm. That's not easy to deal with.
No.
For loads of reasons. He said Navroki, Lager, Bielka, Welsh, various different centre halves. And only now, in the last few weeks, he's got that steady back four again. It's Alistair Johnson, it's Greg Taylor, it's Cameron Carter-Vickers, it's Liam Scales. You can debate, you know, what's happened with Navroki and different things. But at the moment, on paper, that's Celtic's best back four. And I think now that that's consistent and hopefully remains so, will really help Joe Hart.
But you've seen that, I think, even the confidence he takes from Carter-Vickers coming back into the team is clear to see. There was a lot of games we were kind of talking about in the first 2 or 3 months of the season where we were worried about Calmac's performance. But I think the likes of Hart, the likes of McGregor, even I'd say Greg Taylor, they were overcompensating for just unfamiliarity. And I think that has settled down. Our strongest form of attack comes from our back line. Always the case with the way we play football. I think Ange was a master of it. And I think Rodgers has actually just been dealt an unlucky hand in terms of the players available this year. But it's calming down. And actually, I'm not a huge fan of Liam Scales. I've said that before. I take my hat off to what he's done this season. But if the back line is comfortable and Liam Scales is a part of that for the time being, then Liam Scales is a part of it. That's fine. I just think we've really been up against how many times we've had to change our starting 11 this season. We really have.
So your vote goes to?
Matt O'Reilly.
Matt O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. What about yourself, James? If not Joe Hart, who would be the top of the tree for you?
Same. Even out of form, Matt O'Reilly sets up 2 goals yesterday.
Aye.
You know? Yeah. So I thought he was poor. He was in and out. He looks leggy both games. There's things that don't come off for him. There's stray passes, unforced errors. But he still contributes, you know? We obviously want to get him back to, you know, his absolute best. And that will come, hopefully it comes starting Sunday. But on the list you've shown, you know, Scales has done a remarkable job. And you have to say, where would we be this season without Liam Scales? I think that's a question that's to be asked. So, you know, he deserves all of our thanks for his contribution this season. I don't think he's at the level we need. And that's just, football can be hard sometimes. But if we want to kind of progress in Europe, I don't think Scales is going to hit the heights. I think similar to Taylor, he's maxing out his performances. So, yeah, with the rest of the guys on the list there, I think Matt O'Reilly's the choice.
Yeah, what about yourself, Asim? Are you in agreement or have you got someone else in mind?
No, I think if you asked this in December, it was a no-brainer. It was Matt O'Reilly and then Liam Scales would have been second in line. But the drop-off has been quite considerate from O'Reilly, but I still think he was that good for those first half of the season. And if he can pick up a bit of form just towards the end, but I just think, he's been the kind of outstanding player for a large chunk of the season. And then he's just kind of dropped off where the whole team's been pretty poor, you know, after the break for a while. So if he can you know, hopefully that goal yesterday might lift him again. But and having the likes of Hitati to play with, you know, should take off the burden off him to just get back to doing what he was doing better earlier in the season. So for me, I still think it will be Matt O'Reilly. Well, that's where my vote would go to.
Yeah. Paddy, I do not see Mikey Johnson on the list. I don't know if that's an oversight. He must be young player of the year.
It's West Brom's
last question. He's the West Brom's player of the year. Last question just on this section, and it's a quick aside from the player of the year stuff, but one of the categories is goal of the season, as it always is. Couple of big goals there for Kyogo at Ibrox, then at Celtic Park against Rangers. Matt O'Reilly against Motherwell. James, you mentioned that for a feature from last week, but is there any standout goals for you lads out with those ones?
Out with those ones?
O'Reilly's at Tynecastle was pretty sweet. The turn with Palmer, that was really good.
That's a great goal.
I think Kyogo in the Celtic Park one for me just.
Hitati against Kilmarnock is a screamer as well. Just pulls the ball back and then touches it forward away from the player. Great finish.
You've also got Kyogo against Atletico and Lazio, two big goals at Celtic Park.
Atletico didn't win, but.
That's not the criteria.
Everyone talks about Larsson's goal in the 3-3 against Rangers. Still didn't beat him.
Yeah. James, any other goals jumping out for you?
No, I mean, that's...
Matt O'Reilly's yesterday.
just put
a bit of zing on it. But
I think Hitati just beat some two of that one yesterday.
Aye, well, he has first.
You've covered the big ones. I mean, it's O'Reilly for part for me, just for the sheer emotion in that goal.
Yeah, it's. I've basically given you all the best goals just to make it really hard for you and said, out with those great goals and others.
Out of the two goals though for Kyogo, what is your favourite? Because I'm with you, I think the Celtic Park one's an incredible goal. He knows exactly where he's putting it, but the goal at Ibrox, hit, man. What a hit. To take it on the half volley.
And it's the goal of the game, it's the only goal of the game. So, you know.
Still the Celtic Park one for me. Because I remember when he took the shot on, I was like, what are you doing? There was options on. As soon as it left his foot, you're like, wow.
He could have played my head down.
And it was a game over goal as well. It was done.
Yeah. You know, you could ask me at different times. You ask me the day, I'll say the Celtic Park one. I might make it the Ibrox one tomorrow. I think they were both.
I think being there
so
as well,
crucial.
Do
you think that's a factor, Paddy, though, if it's a match winning goal or an equaliser? Is that play its part rather than say a late consolation goal, for example?
For what it means, absolutely. It's like what James is saying with O'Reilly's goal at Fir Park. Great moment. We thought we'd kind of dropped points and then just out of nowhere. That goal at Ibrox, but we're still very early, well, not very early in the game, but there was still plenty of football to be played, but we're still
right on half time, wasn't it?
It just silenced him.
I was getting on a flight just as that goal went in. I was like, Didn't know the score until we landed.
Even when watching it though, if you remember, it was like surreal because you were like, wait, has that just happened or is there an off? Like you expected because of the silence.
The noise, lack of noise.
Great goal.
Last week, I know I said that was the last question. This is the last question on that section. We've talked about player of the years, goal of the season, all that kind of stuff. Is there anyone that maybe has fallen short this season? Maybe just underperformed anyone you were excited about? Maybe a new signing? Someone that we know well.
You get a little bit of time.
It's quite a long list for this one, isn't it?
Dear. You might make a new show of that next week.
I would, for me, it's someone who's fallen off the radar very recently, and it's Louis Palmer. I get really excited about him when he came in at first. He got that big goal against Atletico, and I thought he was really going to step up. You were against it from the start?
Not against him, no. I don't really see... I see talent in him, no doubt.
Yeah.
I don't see him as a winger at all. You saw him against Ross County playing in a 10 role and he was outstanding. Came off the bench, I think, actually, playing that 10 role. And he seemed really comfy in it. He got a goal. You know, he was really busy. On the wings, he just,
He doesn't get anywhere near Celtic's wings now with Kuhn in his form. And we've not had time to cover what Kuhn done against Livingston. He was excellent again. Man of the match, buddy, I think. Third in a row. And Yang, he's definitely bringing something to the party as well. So Louis Palmer's a bit of a disappointment for me, but anyone similar for you, Paddy?
I think even with Palmer as well, though, I think I'd still give the guy time. I'd give him a full 1 year at Celtic. I do see him in the wings, actually. I just think he's a bit of a one-trip pony, but it takes a good manager to kind of bring that out of him and calm him down, because we look at the kind of deliveries we're now starting to see for Nicholas Kuhn. They're on the point into the six-yard box. Palmer's not got that. Palmer takes an extra touch and thinks, hang on, there's a shot on here. He just needs to kind of cut some of that stuff out.
That's why I can't see him on the wing, though, because of that one-trick pony. I think, not comparing him at all to this player I'm going to mention, but Mravchik's style, because Mravchik was never quick. But he had that kind of trickery and just that ping. The, you know, the, some of the goals that Palmer scored this season have been reminiscent.
He's got
that,
good technique.
You know, good technique.
Yeah, 100%.
I'd like to see him tried in there. Just maybe. You know, see if he can unlock a defence. But I remember tweeting about him quite early, one of my infamous early rash tweets.
I'm going early. You go too soon.
I know. And I think I just said, I think it was maybe the Feyenoord game, so it was literally his second appearance. And I just said, I don't know about him just because of his lack of pace.
Aye.
But then he went through a really good spell after that and then just tailed off again. But he's someone that's not been in the picture. So again, could play an important role in the last six games if we need him.
I'd like to see him on the right. I think on the left it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, this cutting inside thing, everyone's worked out. Any right back in the league that doesn't know he's going to do that isn't doing their homework. Exactly. But on the right hand side, you've mentioned that he has a good technician. He can whip a ball in with a bit of pace, with a bit of something on it. And I'd like to see him on the right linking up with an Alistair Johnson, you know, overlapping, underlapping, whatever it may be, and trying to get some deliveries into Kyogo from there. Because as a footballer, he's clearly got ability. But at the moment, after a promise in the early start, he's not really kicked on. So we'll see. Listen, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll be bringing you the latest mystery voice as Paddy and Assam take their first shot at our new feature. Welcome back, folks. We launched the Mystery Voice last week, which now replaces the Mystery Cell. And after a few guesses, Miff eventually got the answer, which was, of course,
Carl Starfelt.
So signed from Rubin Kazan in July 2021, one of Angie's first signings. He formed a formidable partnership with Cameron Carter-Vickers, as we all know. I think the stat applies that they never lost a league game together. Did that stay?
Yep.
An amazing record over the course of two seasons there. And unfortunately, love called James.
Wasn't the only formidable partnership.
So he moved on, he left for Celta Vigo in the summer, and I believe he's a regular over there, and good luck to him. Ask him your thoughts on Starfelt. Were you a fan?
Yeah, I was. He's one of those that came in and got criticism early doors, and for some it just stuck. It was one of those that they...
Did you tweet early about him?
No, I think I gave him a bit of time. But yeah, and even within the media, I think some of them just had it in for Michael Stewart, I remember particularly, was pretty scathing of him. But he, for me, as of like maybe a few months in, was pretty consistent. And I think you've seen this season, maybe he was undervalued. Well, I've always thought he was very good, but you see the steady partnership he had with Carter Vickers, and just how I think they complemented each other really well, and we've just not managed to replace him. We were talking there about players that have disappointed. I would add Navrotsky to that list, because I almost thought he would be that replacement. So yeah, difficult guy to replace. You've seen that.
Just on that, Paddy, if he was still around, would he be starting games for Celtic today?
Without a doubt.
Easy.
Without a doubt. Yeah. I think he's been a huge loss for us this season. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, let's take a listen at this week's Mystery Voice.
Game is this, if no matter what championship is this, if it's a cup game or a league game, I want to score in every single game.
James. That may be correct.
Oh, straight in.
I thought it might have been a bit easy. But yep, you're right in there with that
No credit, just it was too easy.
I made it too easy. It's all my fault.
Gorgeous George.
Well, we'll beep that out for anyone playing at home, and we'll cover a bit more detail on him in next week's show. We'll also reshare the clip on the socials for anyone who wants to have a go there. To close out the show, as mentioned, we'll be back on Friday with an extended Countdown to Kickoff ahead of Sunday's big game, where we will be asking various big questions. And we did cover this one to an extent at the start, but I do want to get your definitive opinions on one big question for now. Callum McGregor should be fit and available after missing the last four games, including the international break. Put simply, and I've got your response already, James, but I'll come to you then, Paddy. Does he slot right back in place of Tomoki Iwata?
Yes.
Yep, definitely for me, yeah.
No, I think he does, not on any slate to Iwata, apart from the fact that he's not played this tie or ran the sixes in this tie.
Iwata.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big thing you're going to get from Hatate, McGregor, and O'Reilly's experience of this. No fans. You'll be getting hammered from minute one. There'll be physicality all over the place. I really rate Iwata, and I think he's going to be a huge player for Celtic. It might just be too soon for him.
I think Iwata's crucial to this game on Sunday in terms of if it's a game that we need to control, he comes on.
But you expressed a concern about potentially starting with McGregor and Hatate, because you might have to take them both off at one point. Mm-hmm. Would that still be a concern for you?
It is, but then I kind of look at the guys that are coming in, and I do have, I'd rather we play our strongest two midfielders for the very get-go, get as long as we can out them. The worry is that they break down with injury again, but I don't see that. I don't think that's going to happen with Itati, on the basis that I generally think they've really looked after him coming back, and I think they've actually kind of given McGregor the same amount of time just to be 100% crystal. knowing that we could easily go and take the momentum here on Sunday. Yeah. So,
I mean, Celtic could certainly have rushed Callum McGregor for the weekend there at Livingston. It was an option to them. They've made a decision as a team, as a sports science team, as a backroom unit, not to take that gamble and keep him fresh for Ibrox.
You guys made the point, though. I think, like, have they maybe hit their momentum, they hit their peak a little bit too early, and I think Celtic have possibly just looked at what have we got coming back here. Are these guys ready? Could this help us in the running?
Yeah, I thought the refs had peaked too soon as well, but seen nothing yet.
What Paddy was referencing there was Miff, who said that Rangers peaked too early in the campaign and he thinks the momentum is now with Celtic. That gets some fun responses online, as you can imagine. But it was Miff that said it, not me, so we'll blame him for that. I've asked the question there, I suppose, about McGregor replacing Iwata, but to James's suggestion, do you see him potentially coming in further up?
For O'Reilly?
Yeah.
No, I think if he comes in, it will be for Iwata. I'm in the minority here, I might get a bit of stick, but with Iwata, I don't know. I think for this kind of game, I've thought last season when he came on against Rangers, he does well for the last 30 minutes, showing things up. I think he started the game at Ibrox that we lost, but again, there was a lot of changes in that game, so mitigating circumstances. For me, he's sometimes too safe in possession, I felt, in the home games maybe. I think for a game at Ibrox, potentially that's what you need, someone that will just keep the ball moving. I think in games where I've maybe been a bit frustrated is when I feel like he's too sidewards and safe in his passing. A bit like Neil Lennon used to be, reminds me of that kind of player. But I think he serves a purpose. I thought yesterday with his interceptions and his off the ball work, especially second half, he can be really effective. And I think, like you say, on an occasion like Ibrox, I think the good thing is you've got Bernardo who came on, and obviously he'll get confidence from his goal, and he's been trusted in this game as well. So I think if he did start Hatate, O'Reilly and McGregor, which would be back three, who I think are the three best midfielders at the club, but you've got the option if they need to come off of two guys who are on form, who are feeling good about themselves, who've played. And I think that's a strong five to pick from. But if I'm going to start the three, it would be the three that have been there, done that, know the fixture, and have proved to be successful in this fixture.
Generally speaking, I would agree with that. I think you do start your best players forever, and they are the three best midfielders at Celtic at this moment in time. And Callum McGregor's your captain. You know, he's your leader. He's been there, done that so many times. And I do think, as well as Cameron Carter-Vickers and Joe Hart, in terms of what they bring leadership-wise, the players look towards him. Asim, you mentioned that Hatate being in the park at Livingston just in itself gave the players around him a boost, and I think the same applies for Callum McGregor. That said, I wouldn't be too disappointed if Iwata starts, if it's deemed that Callum McGregor's not quite there. You know, there was photos from training last week at Celtic Park and he seemed to be missing yet again. He's not been in the park with the players. Now, he could have been there today or tomorrow or whenever it is and have a really good, strong week of training. I think fitness-wise he's ready to go, but it's a hell of a game, James, just to step back into, isn't it?
Not for Callum McGregor, it's not.
No.
You know, Paddy mentioned earlier on, 2nd of February or February 22, and tells you everything. And, you know, not being on the...
He's 2 years older now.
Not 2 years more experienced. Not being on the training park doesn't necessarily mean anything negative. He could be following a very specific programme, and I'm pretty sure that he is. That necessitates, you know, maybe gym work, it might be, you know, swimming or whatever kind of thing that's not on the park. Anytime he's on the park, it'll be mandated as part of his programme, and when he's not, it's also the same. So no real concerns for me there. If he is past fit, he starts and he plays.
As I said, I don't think this is a point. I know I'm speaking about is taking our time with players coming back, but I think it's if you're 60, 70, 80% fit, you're in the team now. And just because of how important this running is for us. The thing with Iwata is, do you feel comfortable, or, and this is a question to all of you, do you feel comfortable or confident with him trying to dictate the pace of our game on Sunday?
I don't. And that's the other thing I was going to say. If you remember the Ibrox game earlier in the season, McGregor ran the show. Like, they could not get near him. I don't think they're going to allow that again. I think they're going to go man to man on him. But see, if you've got Rio there, that's
another worry.
Yeah, because whereas if you've got Iwata, they could probably be just like, right, we'll focus on Rio. Because they wouldn't mind Iwata having the ball because he's not going to really hurt, whereas McGregor can hurt you, Rio can hurt you, Matt O'Reilly can hurt you. I think we start the three and go for it.
You're convincing me. I'm hearing it. What you did see from Iwata, and I was just going to ask your general opinions on him as a player, Paddy, but as I mentioned, he is a safe player. He is very much like Neil Lennon, just side, back. Lennon got booed for that at times at Celtic, which was nuts because he'd done such a good job and he was so effective. I thought Iwata had I'm a big fan, it's on record, you are as well, and he'd a poor game, possibly his poorest game against Hearts.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was a sending off and things going on, but he got his pocket picked a couple of times and it just wasn't a great day for him. had a couple of folk then tweeting me back, oh, where's your Iwata now? You know, and fine, right, that's part of it. But I think he's a very good player, but he is a safe player. Yep. And it just depends what Brendan Rodgers is going to Ibrox for. Is he going all out to win? And if he is, I think you're right, it's McGregor, Tati O'Reilly. Is he going there to soak it up for the first half and see what they bring to the party? If so, it might be an Iwata, but do you know what?
But then I would say to you on that,
either way,
is if they're coming up against us and we're the ones trying to soak all the pressure, he didn't do that at Tynecastle.
Yeah.
And that's my worry about him. I think he needs to be on the offence more than anything. I think he's very comfortable in coming in and taking control of the midfield when guys have ran about for an hour as well. I really do.
His best games against Rangers was those cup games when he came on.
Hamden,
I definitely see a player that can get better. He's just not had enough exposure to that kind of environment, in my opinion. But
there's only one way to give him that exposure.
It's not at this point in the season. Come on, you.
Once you've got a bit more in your backpack kind of thing. All the Rodgers will be looking for start to finish on Sunday is control. You know, he's not going to play for a draw. He's not going to play for a win. He's going to look to control the game and win the game for there.
So play for a win.
Play for a win, yeah.
Yeah. We'll cover all, as I say, we'll be back, myself, James and Paddy, at 12 noon on Friday. We'll cover it all in much more detail. Asim, we might not speak to you before Sunday, so just to get your own scoreline prediction, what are you going with? I know it's early in the week, but
I used to go early.
You can tweet it tonight if you like.
I think it genuinely is a title defining game. Like, I know there's a lot of football still to be played after it, not to be negative, but I just think if we lose this and we go potentially five behind going into the split.
What you're saying is the refs won't let it happen. I hear you.
Well, there's that as well. But I think we can't afford to lose. So I'll take a draw, even if you ask me at this stage. And I think that's what the score will be. I think it'll be a score draw.
Okay, we'll see how it plays out and we'll get the boys' opinion later in the week. Just a small thing I'd like to touch on. We were maybe going to catch it earlier on, just the way the discussion was going. But it's about Sky Sports and how they're presenting Scottish football. But let's be more pointed about it. It's about Chris Boyd and the nonsense he's bringing. I get they need to, or do they need to? In Scottish football, there needs to be a Rangers guy and a Celtic guy, and it's Sutton v Boyd and all that stuff. And that's what they've gone with for some time now. But I get that if it's a Rangers-minded guy who's got a decent opinion and something worth listening to. And that's valid, right? You know, we're Celtic, they're Rangers, that's fine. But give us something credible. You've got the penalty situation that we've already discussed in a bit of detail there about Kyogo and the contact that was made and different things. You've got Chris Boyd with the eyes painted on because he can't be seeing that and saying what he's saying. It doesn't match up, Paddy. He's basically just saying, I'm doing the Rangers thing here. I'll just say, no, it isn't. And here's why it isn't. It's becoming farcical.
He didn't even say why it isn't.
Yeah.
I didn't even get that. It's pretty pathetic stuff. It's extremely petty from him. And, you know, where people are spending so much money a month on this coverage, and that's you're sitting watching that. We're talking about it, but we're talking about it for all the wrong reasons. And that's all these TV companies want, is people to be speaking about what's happened on the show. I want to pay money and I want to listen to people speaking about football and understanding how football operates, and that guy's not got a clue.
Somebody tweeted today, I'm not sure who it was, that said Chris Boyd's doing his job because look at us, we're tweeting about him right now. And I get that, but to your point, Paddy, you do want to be entertained, James. You want some detail. I don't care if he's a Celtic, Rangers, Hearts, Hibs, whatever. If someone's giving you good insight, that's enjoyable. If someone's maybe played the game or been at a level or been around football and can say, actually, here's what's happened here, and give you something to think about. But as I say, Chris Boyd's just playing the panto villain type stuff, and it's become so tired and so boring.
It's pathetic, you know, and Sky need to take a good look at themselves here, because we're trying to, you know, build our game and promote our game. They are tasked with doing that as part of the media outlet, and they're putting on a guy that you could have dragged them out of any Rangers pub in Glasgow and get the exact same opinion. There's no nuance, there's no intelligence behind it. If you listen to Go Radio and you listen to Barry Ferguson, you know, Rangers legend, all that stuff, I really like listening to Barry Ferguson talking about football, because he knows what he's talking about. He's played football all his life and he considers what he's about to say. If he was sitting in that seat where Boyd was yesterday, he'd have been saying, that's a penalty for me, he's kicked through the back of him, no doubt in my mind. So it's not about, you know, a Rangers thing, it's just about the idiocy of the guy. That's the simplest of it.
If you want a good laugh, YouTube Chris Boyd mattress advert. That's all I'll say. Amazing.
That's when he was in the States.
It's incredible. He struggles to say the word mattresses. It's one of the funniest things I've ever watched in my life.
It's just the thing, like, as James says, I quite like Barry Ferguson's commentary as well, and people can clip this up as they care to do, and that will go down well. But it's just someone who's, he's not just sticking on a blue jersey and saying, well, I'll just say this for the sake of it. And it's to be encouraged. See, as I say, no matter who someone supports as a pundit, if it's just detailed analysis and insight, that's what we're all in it for, isn't it?
Yeah, just to give another couple of examples who might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I think, like James has said, can add something else. So, well, like Neil McCann, another one who I think, But I feel like it's not just about wind up for Neil McCann. Like, I might not agree with all of his opinions, but, you know, and similarly, McCoist, again, like, I'm not his biggest.
You're killing me here, man. I've had to stop watching midweek football because of him.
I'm not
insufferable.
I quite like him.
No. Guys, cut this last bit.
Just stop that.
But with Boyd, he offered, well, Sky clearly rate him because they've got him on the Gillette's, you know, the pundit panel for that as well.
But he's there as an idiot for that show, and he gets made an idiot of and had done for the last 3 or 4 years.
It's like you say, anyone tuning in for actual football analysis or anything articulate, it's just pointless. Like we mentioned Sutton before, he can bring a bit of both. He can be a wind-up, but he's humorous with it, and he's intelligent, he's played at a high level. Boyd just brings nothing to the table whatsoever. And then I think some of the co-pundits sometimes seem to be getting annoyed with him as well by the looks of it.
And we talked before we came on here, it's worth kind of just repeating that when it cut to the Liverpool-Brighton game, which is poor from Sky's point of view, don't put us in your main sports channel if you're going to put us in the second channel after. So it cut from main event to Sky Sports Football, and they say they're doing that half time. That's fine for us as fans to say, what are you doing? Boyd starts moaning about that, and you're going, they're paying your wages. You know what I mean?
No.
Idiot.
So, Chris Boyd, Neil McCann, Barry Ferguson, Alan McCoist, all big favourites, are we agreed?
Just basher for me.
Yeah, well, let's move on before we get ourselves in even more bother. Paddy, I'll come to you for your final comments for the week.
Watch that YouTube video, it's really funny.
Please.
That's it. We'll retweet it, surely. I'm excited. This is what it's all about for me. It's getting to a right exciting point in the season, and just feel that things are starting to kind of move in the right direction for us at the right time. As I say, I do think we could play a bit better, a bit quicker, and I think that's going to come. The guys will get used to playing with each other again, especially at midfield three. I think it's going to be super important for us for the running in this season. You've seen Greg Taylor getting back into just a little bit of familiarity of what he was doing last season. Alistair Johnson, since we've come back as well, I think he's just getting there too. And as you mentioned earlier on, Nicholas Coon is looking the player. So it's exciting times.
Yeah, lots to be excited about. Asim, your own final comments.
Yeah, I think the nerves will start kicking in just because it's such a massive game. But we're going into it in as good form and place as we can be. Obviously, we'll just wait and see what happens with McGregor. But if he's fit, then you're looking at only Palma being the one that's really injured at the moment. So it's, in terms of squad, it's as strong as we've been all season. Eagerly awaiting to see who the refs are. I bet you Beaton will be involved somehow.
Beaton and Walsh.
Aye, is that not so due about now? We're recording at tea time here on Monday. I think it's due about now.
But Walsh ref Beaton.
You just wouldn't be surprised that they'll stick Beaton in there somewhere.
Bring back Mike McCurry just for the buzz.
Maybe call him VAR, because he can't trust his safety in the stadium, but Walsh will be ref, I think.
Yeah, let's see.
But looking forward to it. And like I say, as long as we can avoid defeat, I think we're in a very, very strong position.
Yeah.
And as always, we'll look forward to your tweets, Asim, so keep an eye.
James, 3 minutes past 12. Get that off.
James, last word goes to yourself.
Here we are now, you know, so 7 games to go. And from yesterday's performance, I thought first half, maybe just a wee bit over-eager, some, you know, clumsy stuff. Second half was professional beyond belief. And I'll take 7 more of them. I think we need to win 6 of these 7 to be absolutely sure. So here we go.
Yeah, as Brendan says, and we'll keep repeating it, this is a fun time, but no more fun than winning at Ibrox. So let's hope that's where we get to this weekend. So that wraps things up on this latest episode of the Celtic Exchange Weekly. Thanks to James, Asim and Paddy for joining me, and thanks to you for tuning in. Don't forget to join us live on Friday afternoon at 12 o'clock for the countdown to kickoff. But in the meantime, as always, thanks for supporting the Celtic Exchange, and we'll see you again very soon.
Podcast Network.